You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It might have just been the most exciting game yet. A crowd pumped just days before Christmas and the defending champion Toronto Raptors in town, the Pacers brought their best. Indiana jumped out to an early 11-point first quarter lead and a 10-point halftime lead, but the team that came back from 30 down just the night before would not give up. Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet burst the Raptors for a 35-point third quarter to take a 1-point lead heading to the fourth. Then the duo went toe-to-toe with Indiana. Lowry finished with 30 points and 9 assists, and Fred VanVleet finished with 21 points and 11 assists. But they underestimated one element, Aaron Holiday. In the sophomore guard's just 12th start after Malcolm Brogdon was a late-day scratch with a hamstring injury, the youngest of the NBA brothers scored 16 second-half points, finishing with 19 points and 10 assists. But he might not even been the best Pacer on the night, as the fifth-year center from Texas with the ponytail and everything went for 24 points, including 5 of 6 from 3, including 2 huge threes in overtime, as the Pacers beat the Raptors 120-115. Welcome in the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful show. On today's podcast, I'll bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pacers' 121-115 overtime win against the Raptors. And then we'll have a discussion about Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis. A lot more good, a little bad, and very little ugly in the Pacers' 120-115 overtime win over the Raptors. So I think I just want to start going into this game. There was optimism on my part. I think on Sunday's or Monday's show, I thought the Pacers would win this game, but then when I saw the Brogdon scratch with a hammy injury, which I don't know much about, frankly, I got concerned. Both teams were down kind of their main players, right? The Pacers were down Brogdon and obviously Oladipo, who's, I would continue to say, has been out, obviously. And Raptors didn't have Gasol and Pascal as their kind of main two and a bunch of kind of bench guys. So it became kind of more even. Both have done a back-to-back, so that was negated out as well, so that didn't really matter. So, you know, I thought the Pacers' best chance was starters hold with the Lowry VanVleet, and then the bench kind of carries them. And really tonight, that's kind of where I want to go first, and that's kind of the first, I don't know if I call it bad. I would call it not good, but I call it somewhere in the middle where the bench did not have like just that stellar performance. Part of that is really Aaron Holiday started, so he wasn't with the bench units, so Sumner kind of slotted in. And two, Sabonis didn't have a great offensive day, not very efficient, missed 5 free throws, only 5 of 14. I mean, had a ton of big rebounds. Don't get me wrong, he certainly is not part of the bad, but he didn't have this like 10 of 14 game when he's efficient, at least everybody else being efficient and so on. McDermott, too, was only 2 of 7 from 3. McConnell couldn't make a 3, but he had an okay night. I mean, McConnell, I think, was fine. A little, I think, too much shot hunting, but when you look at what the plus-minus, basically, the bench, I think for the first time in probably, I don't know how long it's been, the bench unit was really a minus. Now, again, Aaron Holiday, who was kind of, I think, the most important player on that bench unit, and I think that kind of showed tonight the way he played with the starters. Him being with the starters probably affected that a ton, so we should give, you know, a caveat to that. But still, the bench, really not the best night. But going to the positive, I mean, that's, I mean, you either start with, you know, as a good with Holiday or Turner. I'm going to start with Holiday because I just thought, man, this guy continues. So he had 19 points and 10 assists on 5 of 10 from 3 and 7 of 16 from the field. Not like a superb first half. I thought he was, the thing I noticed with him especially, he takes a decent amount of shots when he's starting, but he's not like forcing things at times. He's trying to take a shot in rhythm. It's not like he's, you know, preventing other guys from scoring. But the one thing he is getting better at, too, is just recognizing the pass. I mean, he had this late. He had a great pass to TJ Warren late in the game. Set up Warren for a 3, put the Pacers up, I think, at one point by 3 or 4 that really helped build a cushion as they, you know, the Raptors came back and obviously tied it to go to overtime. But even earlier in the game, I think he found Sabonis on a nice pop. He found Turner a couple times. Like, he still isn't perfect yet. Don't get me wrong. He only had one turnover, but he still had a couple kind of, I wouldn't call them turnovers, but just like not perfect passes. But he's definitely starting to recognize things more. And I especially loved his aggressiveness late. They're playing that 2-3 zone, and he basically, Aaron Holiday decided he was going to beat it. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, he basically, like, he kept trying to find a pass, and he kept trying to think, oh, maybe I shouldn't be shooting. It felt like at times he was trying to get Sabonis at times, whatever. Then eventually he just realized, oh, they're giving me the 15-footer. I'm going to take it. Then he hit that enough times, it forced them to play a little bit up on him. Then Turner was open for threes. That happened in the fourth quarter or in the overtime. I think that was kind of a key part of that. And then also he was able to take some threes because they were having to kind of cut off certain driving lanes, so I have to play farther back, getting him some space and whatnot. So I thought he was superb late. He continues, I think, to be their most clutch player, to be honest. And I think we're all heading to a world where it's Aaron Holiday is going to be like the third starter next to, not this season, no, but I think in a couple years next to Brogdon and Oladipo. Because, I mean, I don't know what his ceiling is, but it keeps growing every game. I mean, to come up, basically to have to go toe-to-toe with guys like Lowry and Van Fleet, which he didn't do a great job defending them, don't get me wrong, he wasn't like some superb defender, but just to have to be able to go toe-to-toe with two guards who I think are Lowry definitely one of the, you know, I know he's not like maybe at his peak anymore, but one of the best guards in the NBA still, maybe one of the best ones in the East, maybe the best one in the East behind like Kemba and Kyrie. And really, this season, Lowry is having a fantastic year, but definitely one of the most consistent guards in the East, if, like, and as consistently good. Fed VanVleet, a very good guard, in my opinion, you know, was awesome in the finals last year. So just to go toe-to-toe with that guy, those guys, a second-year guy who has some ton of experience on a team where Brogdon is a key part of their offense, so having to replace that guy and really doing an adequate job is an A-plus game for Aaron Holiday. But, I mean, I think the guy who had the best night, just because he's finally, I think, put a sound to the creation. I don't want to spend too much time on Miles Turner because I'm going to do it a lot of it later, but 9 of 12 from the field overall, 5 of 6 from 3, 7 rebounds, 24 points, 3 blocks, big 3 in the fourth quarter, 2 big 3s in overtime. He was awesome. This is what he can be at his best. He's not going to be this every night, but this is why the Pacers will never move on from Turner, because if he has one of these games every, let's say, every 20 games, that's enough with all his defense and, you know, to be able to be like, oh, this guy is really good. And the key with him is hitting these games at the right moment, right? So he took advantage. He did a good job taking advantage of a team that was down their best center in Gasol and having to play much smaller. He just kind of made him pay. I mean, I thought, you know, Sabonis going to him, I would say he didn't have a great night. I would call him again. I wouldn't put him as bad or good. I put him kind of in the middle, where I thought he made some huge defensive rebounds in critical moments, but he could not hit a free throw for life. I mean, if he hit his free throw, they would have won this game in regulation. He really continues sometimes to just like fight for shots down low. He doesn't have. He was better off kicking out. He's got to figure out how to pass out of the post sometimes, especially with this Pacer team. But Turner. I mean, Turner, I think, also gets an A+. Sabonis, to me, probably gets like a B in this game. But he played well. The other bad, I want to kind of highlight this real quick, and that's just because Justin Holiday continues to be sort of not the best three-point shooter. So he was 1 of 5 tonight, including 1 of 4 from 3. I'm going to pull up his stats on his three-point shooting over the last, like, I think he's had a pretty bad 10-game stretch, but he didn't have a really good night, I don't think. You know, a guy like him is not going to be, like, perfect every night just because he's just not like that good of an NBA player. But so let's go back to like the end of November, and you pull up his 3-point shot stats. If they'll load on me real quick, Let's go back to mid December. That's where his, you know, he's been really poor at probably the last 5 games. If I can figure out how to make this work, this is great podcasting when I'm doing stats live. Okay, so let's take his last 5 games, including tonight. He is shooting less than 20% from three. Less than 23%, sorry. So he's shooting about 21% from three. He's just been, I don't know, it's been a bad 2 weeks, give or take, for him. Hopefully he'll get out of the slump. But that was my bad, just because, he just didn't have a good night. It's fine. The rest of the team played well. A good and not necessarily a player is the fact the Pacers shot 42 threes. And that's kind of something that I think it's going to be critical to the team. Now, it helps that Aaron Holiday took 10 threes, and he is a catalyst to take a ton of threes, and Denver took 7 as well. But if this team's going to compete with the best teams in the Eastern Conference and really the league at times, they're going to take more threes, because overall, this team is not a bad three-point shooting team, right? So I believe they rank like somewhere in the top. I'm going to pull that up too. I know, doing this all live. So they rank 29th in attempts, obviously not good, but they rank 8th in three-point percentage, right? So, and they only take 20, you know, the average now is 27.4. So tonight was the most they've taken ever in printed history at 42 threes. I mean, I think I take 40 every night, but they got to be in the 35 to 40 range every night because they do shoot really well on them. And that 36% probably won't stay. But if they could, you know, take, let's say, 38 threes and shoot 35-something, I mean, that's going to be probably around 12 in the league in terms of percentage and probably 15 in attempts. That would put them on that level, especially with all the post play they have. They just, especially if they don't get the line. I mean, tonight they had a decent time getting the line. They got 20 free throws. But, you know, against the Bucks family, they just struggled to get the line against that team. So they've got to figure out some way to counter this team. And you know, because they're a decent three-point shooting, maybe they take 43s one night. They are able to hit like 18 on the night, which they did, and go 18 for 42 and have just a huge night. I mean, Turner going 5 or 6 kind of carries that number, let's be honest, but they just had a great night from three, and there's not much else you can say. Another, I guess, bad, you know, I guess I don't really know if I've done this yet, but Kyle Lowry, I mean, it's not bad for the Pacers, but Kyle Lowry, man, that dude can go toe-to-toe. I mean, he basically just went toe-to-toe the entire fourth quarter of the Pacers, you know. At one point, I felt like they were going to blow them out, the Pacers were, and they obviously couldn't hold it in the third quarter. But then that fourth quarter, I feel like every time the Pacers tried to get a little bit more extension, Kyle Lowry came back, hit a huge layup, did something, hit a huge shot, whatever it is. The guy is really good, and you can see why this Raptors team with Pascal and when everybody's back is going to be a really good basketball team. They're going to be scary, and so I guess that's the thing we'll have to look for is when these teams kind of meet next. I looked it up when they play next, but when they meet next, you know, maybe everybody will be back for both teams. I don't know about Oladipo yet. That's kind of, I think they play towards the end of June, but you know, if both these teams are at full strength, so they play their next matchup is February 5th. So there actually is a decent chance that Oladipo is back by that game. So, and I'm assuming all the guys, you know, at least Pascal would be back for the Raptors. And so that would be a interesting game to watch. They play actually back-to-back, not back-to-back nights, but they play on the 5th and the 7th, and one is on ESPN. It's going to be interesting. I think both teams will be competitive and close in the Eastern Conference at that point, and I think it will become interesting, in my opinion, for this, for when that happens, because I'm interested to see how these teams play at full strength against each other, to be honest. I mean, I think the Pacers match up okay. You know, I think they have a shot, but the Raptors are a good team. They're a playoff-proven team. They're a experienced team, so they're not going to roll over. I think the Raptors are much better this year than I thought they were going to be. I think Pascal's a huge part of that. Lowry continues to just be, like I said, kind of a consistent rock night in and night out. But again, this is not really a bad or an ugly or whatever. It's just sort of an observation, I guess. But maybe that's kind of the bad side is what do you see a Raptors team? You know, is this really the real Raptors team? And it's an exciting win. It's a good win. This definitely helps them hopefully have a 500 week or above 500 week. Knocking on wood, they probably beat the Pelicans. We'll see later against the Heat that if they win that game, they'll probably sweep the week. Of course, they'll probably lose the Pelicans now that I said that. But it's sort of just it's a bad in the sense that we haven't seen any of these teams at full health, right? So, like, they beat the Lakers without Davis. They beat Milwaukee without – not Milwaukee, sorry. They beat Boston when Hayward went down in the early third. You know, and in the Pacers' defense, they're not at full health either, so it doesn't really mean shit, to be honest, because this team is going to be different only for returns. But they've gotten fortunate, and, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, I guess. That's kind of – a thing to me. Okay, so the last kind of ugly I have, and I think this is the ugliest thing of the night, that's the Pacers' defense. They couldn't hold this lead. The Raptors, who played an extremely long game against, I mean, Kyle Lowry played 42 minutes on Sunday night and now playing on 41. The fact that they couldn't put this team away in the third quarter is annoying, frustrating, confusing, whatever it is. They did pull out of their ass, so let's be honest. They won the game, but the fact they couldn't put them out and win this game by 20 points, it's a little bit discouraging. I think it was just ugly. I just thought it was a really ugly third quarter. Nobody played well. The Raptors just beat up on this team. And I felt like I think at one point in that fourth quarter they were going to run away with it. And then there really was a moment, I think, Justin Holiday had a three to cut it from, I think, 4-1 at one point. And it felt like they were going to, like, I think Van Fleet just hit a huge three. And it felt like the Raptors were going to kind of maybe blow this, not, you know, blow it open to like a 7-10 point lead, I guess. But nope, Pacers fought back, and I think that's the last good end on is the Pacers, you know, blew that big lead, trailing by 5 at one point in the fourth quarter, but fought their way back, had to figure out how to break down that 2-3 defense finally late in the game and just at enough time, credit Aaron Holiday, and this team pulled it out, and they now move to 21-10, half game back of the Raptors, 14-3 at home. I think that's an impressive record. The crowd was awesome tonight. It seemed like a sold-out crowd or close to it. This team is really, I think, starting to build some momentum in Indiana. Especially just because in the community of Indianapolis, because the Colts suck, and this team is really starting. I mean, they're up there with the best. Five, you know, they're below Milwaukee like everybody else, but they're up there with the other five teams in the East, and they're still slot at 6 right now. But they sit half a game back above Toronto and Philly, who I believe play each other on Christmas Day, so they will be ahead of one of them, I guess, or a tie with them. They play Miami this week. They have a shot to cut that 1.5 game down to half a game, and actually, I think with Boston, they're technically kind of tied. Almost, Boston's played like I think, four less games than the Pacers. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I think this is a really encouraging win. It's exciting. And I think the Pacers, it helped build some momentum. This team really is winning a lot more games than I thought. And I think they could beat Miami Friday. That will be huge. Let's take one quick break, and then I want to talk about Turner and Sabonis real fast. So it's our favorite topic in Pacerland, Turner Sabonis. Nothing critical or negative here. I just thought it'd be interesting. I did a little kind of digging on some on-off court stats for Sabonis and Turner because both are playing, I think, well. I think Sabonis is having like an all, you know, I think, I mean, like, here's an interesting stat to start with. Okay, let's just start with this. So when you do defensive win shares and then win shares in terms of like centers in the leagues, Sabonis ranks second in defensive win shares overall, which I think is, I mean, kind of incredible. When you do net rating for centers and you kind of, you know, mess with some things, Sabonis ranks seventh. Turner ranks, I think, oh, I can't do the math, probably in the late teens, early 20s. So Sabonis is having like an all-NBA, borderline all-NBA type season, a type of year where he should make the All-Star game. But what's interesting is they're much better actually together than they are separate, right? So like, when he takes the Sabonis' net rating, it is higher when he's off, when he's on the court without Turner by like about two and a half points. But I think that more has to do with who he's playing with and who he's playing against. So Sabonis gets about 5 minutes per game, but he has about an even amount of time with Turner and off the court. It's about 19 minutes each, it looks like. 19 minutes on the court with him, 19 minutes off the court with him. That's what he's averaging right now. Because some of those are games Turner hasn't played in. But Sabonis is playing against the bench, a lot of bench unit, getting a lot of minutes against them with guys who fit around him very well, who can all play off each other pretty well. But what's interesting when they're Turner and Sabonis both are better on the court with each other, right? So when, for example, Sabonis is on the court and you look at all his shooting percentage, right? So when Turner him on the court, he shoots an effective percentage of 57.5 and true shooting percentage of 61.8. With Turner off the court, his effective field goal percentage drops to 48.9 and true shooting percentage drops to 53.1. So how's it look for Turner? Well, it's not as steep of a drop, but it's still similar. So when on the court together, Turner shoots 52% effective field goal percentage and a 56 true shooting percentage, and 51 when he's off court and 53 for true shooting percentage without Sabonis. So both guys can just shoot better, honestly, when they're on the court together. And it's making, you know, and they have a net rating on the court together of a positive 6.6, which is really good. And, you know, overall, Sabonis has a much higher net rating than Turner. And again, it's, I think he's playing that bench. He's playing more minutes. You know, that bench has really blown out some teams, and that's been awesome. But and I don't think Turner can play with that bench. But what I mean is, together they're successful. It's so far at least they're successful together. There's no reason not to play them together. You know, they've figured this out, right? So Turner, you know, 3-point percentage has sort of dropped. It's not been great. He was shooting at 40%, but now he's shooting at like 34. But if he has a couple more nights like this, he'll be back up and back up in the 40s, and that's the difference. You know, if Turner is shooting 40% from three, basically, and taking half the shots from there, him and Sabonis work, because defensively it seems to work on the court together, right? Their defensive net rating is 100. I'm not sure that would rank in the league. I should probably look that up real fast. That'd be an interesting number to look up. Do that real fast. But they just, they're on the court together, they're just effective. I mean, they've, and it might be the teams they played in. There aren't a ton of teams that can really exploit the Pacers just because they're so talented. Like, I think the Pacers basically are on level, right, with most of the team in the league except for maybe the top three, right? So Turner and Sabonis' net rating on the court together is lower than any team's net defensive net rating, right? And now, that's kind of a weird stat. But what I'm saying is it works. You know, the defense works. The offense is good enough. It's 107. It's not fantastic, but it's about what the Pacers' average offensive rating is anyway. So it's not like they're, you know, Pacers average of 1.8.2, I think, on the court together. Sabonis and Turner are 107.3, so it's about a point lower. So they're effective together. It works. That's an exciting sign, I think, because if that works, and then you start adding in some of this more talent, and, you know, who knows where Aaron Holiday goes. I mean, we're talking about, I think, possibly a lineup next year with Brogdon, Aaron Holiday, Oladipo, and the two kind of center forwards, whatever you want to call them, with, like, you know, maybe they figure out how to turn TJ Warren and Lamb into somebody else, one player or whatever. But, like, we're talking about a seven-deep team with seven players who are really good. And then the eighth guy on that roster right now basically is, what, who's the eighth on that one? So we're looking good on the list. It's Justin Holiday or TJ McConnell or McDermott, right? That's a pretty good team. I mean, that's a pretty good team going into the playoffs even, if that's the team you're kind of looking at. So I'm excited for where this team is heading. And the way they play together also helps right with Goga, right? Because they can play Goga now. Now, I don't know. I like the staggering. I think that's the best bet. But maybe if they can develop Goga a little bit, they can trade him. You know, I don't know. That making that pick kind of look iffy, in my opinion, because I think the staggering really works, and I'm not sure if Goga... I mean, I think Goga could be good, but I think there's not really room for him to play. I get the whole take the best player, but, you know, a guy like Matisse Thybulle would be pretty interesting right now. I think he went right before Goga in that draft, but... What it's doing potentially is putting the Pacers, I guess, in a good position, right? So where they maybe can't play Goga as much, but they're not going to play him, I don't think, that much rest of the year. And where, you know, they really can't... It's putting them in a position where they sort of have to stagger them and have to do that, but it's putting them in a position where they're pretty good. So I'm going to look up real quick who was taken after Goga. Because, I mean, I do think the pick is fine. Goga's going to be a good player, don't get me wrong. I just think... I guess you don't supposed to pick for position because who the hell knows, but... Like, after Goga, yeah, Matisse went 20, Brandon Clark went 21. Yeah, I mean, that's where you kind of think. Carson Edwards went 33 on Edwards. But, like, Brandon Clark would have been really good in a Pacer uniform right now, and so would Matisse Thybulle. Matisse Thybulle would probably be the best one right now. But it is what it is. I think it's exciting the way Pacers are playing right now. I think this team is in for an exciting next week. If they can beat Philly and Miami, I mean, this team's going to be in second in the East all of a sudden. And Oladipo and out there being at their peak, so... Very, very interesting, but I think it's an exciting time to be a Pacer fan. I think this team has some remnants of, in my opinion, of the 2017-18 team. And we forget last year, the Pacers were on pace to win like 50 games till Oladipo got hurt. And so, you know, I don't know how much credit you want to give to McMillan or whatnot in this team, but they've been pretty solid for 3 years straight. They probably would have won a first-round series against Philly or... Probably not Boston, but they probably won a first-round series 2 years ago if they didn't draw Cleveland, the team who won the East, who they took to seven and were the most competitive with. Don't let Boston, they were competitive, the most competitive the Pacers were. The Pacers literally forced LeBron to cramp in that fourth quarter to have to win. You know, they pushed LeBron to the max, making him play 40-plus minutes in all that entire series, and they probably should have won that series. And last year, like I said, they were on pace to do really well, and Oladipo got hurt, and he was the linchpin in the team, and they built this team to be less reliable on him, which is very smart and really good, but... Just let's imagine what it's like when he's on this team. I know we're heading to Christmas Eve, so I want to give you guys just to say, I know this is the kind of the Christmas Eve show, so Merry Christmas. If you listen to this podcast on Christmas Day, have a good holidays. If you have any thoughts, questions, whatnot, feel free to tweet at the Lockdown Pacers podcast. I'm doing a show on Thursday. It might be a mailbag, but I guess I'll record it Wednesday on Christmas Day. So maybe if you're bored, you'll see our tweet and want to send some questions. We'll see. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Lockdown Pacers, like I said before. Follow me at FreeMadam5. My co-host Tony's at TEASTNBA. That's all for the Lockdown Pacers podcast. We'll see you guys on Thursday.